fair to say that many tribal decks want their commander to be an encapsulation of the tribe's entire philosophy, and to fit flavorfully with why you, the deck builder, picked that tribe in the first place. But as ever, form needs to be balanced with function, and often whole creature types are left without a leader, and known tribal staples feel played out. So what tribes do we want to see find their feet in this year of Commander, and which already dominant archetypes do we think need fresh blood? Welcome to Magic the Flavoring, the Magic the Gathering podcast. We talk about all things magic, flavor, design, and lore. I'm your host, Andy Mann.
Hello, this is Nathan Cancel.
And we are here today, we are going to be predominantly talking about flavor tribal commanders. We're not really sort of going too deep on anything that's going on right now in Magic, because quite honestly, not a lot is going on in Magic that people aren't already aware of. So we're looking to the future, the far future, the inescapable and yet almost untangible future in which we can actually buy new product and sit down and play paper magic with each other and sling EDH, not on a webcam or on...
We're distinctly sure that life will return to normal. I'll tell you what's not a really good thing. And I know that last week we watched, a couple of weeks ago, we talked about stuff we're watching on Netflix. I don't know if it's media just doing this or not, but there's a lot of stuff about outbreaks, pandemics, end of the world kind of things on at the moment.
Yeah, do you know what? I've watched two films. Sorry to cut in. One of them is Wreck, which is the... was it Wreck? Or was it Quarantine? No, it's Quarantine, which is the American remake of Wreck, which is obviously about being quarantined with a zombie virus. Spoilers for that film. Don't watch it. Watch Wreck. And the other one was, what's it called? It's got Lawrence Fishburne in it, and it's a film. Is it The Outpost? They're in an underground society where you can't have a cold because the earth...
I know what you mean.
I can't remember the name. It was a dire film. Like, it was beyond dire. So, yeah, you're trapped in this society underground, and if you get a cold, you get thrown out into the snow and shot. And I was just thinking, oh, my God. All the characters were going, they're infected, and they've all got face masks on. And me and Holly were just sat there like, okay, this is not a feel-good film. It was also just because
I've got a list of things to watch, and I got quite high up on them as Chernobyl, because I haven't actually got to see that yet. But I found myself watching Seven Seas, which is an anime on Netflix, and it's basically about there's a meteorite that hits the earth, and we're seeing our protagonist like frozen from deep sleep, and like basically they're trying to restart the world, but we don't know how many years it's been or whatever. And it's kind of like always different ways to survive and everything. And even on that element of fantasy, I'm just sat there going, oh, it's all just very... Why am I just watching all doomsday stuff? there's no good feel. Everything I'm watching is just kind of slowly encroaching on this feeling of impending doom. So I don't know if it's deliberate or not, but there's loads of stuff on Netflix and Amazon and everything. It just seems to be a little bit more bleak. That might just be how the world is. I think that's why they balanced out with Tiger King. You know, just to try and balance out the media approach to the situation.
That's true. I've also been playing a lot of Final Fantasy VI. I've been playing what is considered to be the bastardization of it, which is the Steam remaster, where they change a lot of the sprites to make it look like more modern. When they say more modern, just less pixelated. I played Final Fantasy VI ages ago, and it's fucking cool. Because I was watching the Loading Ready Run playthrough with Graham Stark when he was doing Final Fantasy VII, the original. And obviously the remakes come out, which I know you've been playing. I like Final Fantasy VII, but it's not like my jam, whereas Final Fantasy VI, really cool. And you've been playing the remake of Final Fantasy VII.
Yeah, I have. Yeah, I mean, it's no news to anyone that it's done the game a lot of justice. It's done the exact right thing of undermining or subverting the expectation just enough to keep you interested whilst also delivering on all the notes that you want. I think it's a hard game to find fault with beyond the fact that obviously it's segmented. Like, but I find it more exciting to know that they can potentially branch out the game into different directions going forwards rather than just trying to do the same, like trying to fit it all into one. Like Resident Evil 3 remake was considerably worse than the Resident Evil 2 remake purely because they seemed to try and rush it out and they didn't quite give it the care and attention.
Interesting, because I've just finished watching a playthrough of that as well, and I thought it looked pretty rad.
I think it looks good, but it had a lot of it fell a bit short in terms of like storyline depth and everything. Like, I mean, I will listen to the completionist because he plays games exactly how I like to play games, which is completely to death until you hate them and you don't want to play them anymore. Yeah. And he did both of them back to back. And as a comparison, Seven is just a little bit more It just does the franchise a bit more justice, I think. 3 did.
Well, no spoilers for it, because it's recently just come out and people are probably still going through it.
Both games are still very much worth a look at. And there is obviously a big thing for remakes at the moment anyway. Nostalgia apparently isn't being left alone.
Well, it's because all the people our age, all of the 90s kids, like the kind of tail end of millennials, are now starting to get into positions where they can start pushing directions of zeitgeist like a lot more. Kind of Generation X is kind of, you know, their sort of the 80s nostalgia is still kind of there in cinema, but like 90s nostalgia is now starting to poke through. So yeah, we're going to be seeing a lot of that, I think, going forward.
Mm.
But that's not the only thing we've been doing. We've both been playing, weirdly, a lot of Arena, which is not something I used to ever do. And in fact, about 2 or 3 episodes, I think I said that I didn't play Arena and I was just playing Paper EDH, which I am doing as well over webcam. But yeah, I got a new laptop and I was able to download Arena on it because my old one just couldn't support it. And yeah, it's surreal, man. Like, coming from a place of not playing Arena, like, I think it's made me appreciate a lot of things about the kind of Magic I do play. One of the main ones is that, and this is genuinely without any cynicism or like being flippant to people who do play Standard as their main sort of thing or enjoy Standard, I fucking can't do Standard. I really can't get into it, man. Like, it's really not my thing. Like, have you ever been a Standard guy? Like, do you get into
I used to, when I first started playing, because I used to, when I probably got back into playing independently, so that was like buying boxes of Zendikar products, attending F&M drafts every week, building a deck from, obviously, once you start buying multiple boxes, which I would not recommend necessarily unless you're breaking them for packs and everything, because I ended up with basically a lot of good cards, like especially during Zendikar, a lot of fetch lands and everything. So I was able to trade comfortably for a Standard deck. And I made a Boris Bushwhacker deck. But even then, having bought all of this product and getting quite seriously into it week by week, I didn't dip too much into the metagame. And after several months of... my biggest failing with this was that I had to make a decision on whether or not I committed to Stoneforge Mystic or not. And I didn't think that the equipment side was worth it. And then obviously I was wrong. And it's these kinds of things, as well as having to keep up monetarily with Standard, that makes it a little bit more of a difficult threshold to cross. I think if, especially considering it's hard to play Standard casually. I think in some people's minds that opinion is there of where you can't just sit down and throw something together and play. I mean, mono red decks have always been that kind of go-to.
There's no flex spots for a flavor pick, for example, or a pet card.
No, exactly. Yeah. It's, the idea is you are playing competitively, so you do have to kind of turn off that whimsical side. It also depends on the approach that you have to the game. Whereas with Arena, because it's a little bit more available, you're not having to, you know, part money to actual cards and build decks and actually have to go out in person to go and hunt out for the Standard environments. I mean, it's a little bit more accessible.
Yeah.
But I tailed off very quickly as soon as my deck rotated. I kind of got rid of my fetch lands and crawled back into my hall of EDH.
Yeah.
Which is funny because even at that point, I didn't really play EDH. Then what I did is I started building a kitchen table environment where I built decks that didn't really have a format. Like, they were basically heightened Standard decks, so they were able to play in a Standard format of only up to four of a card and all that nonsense, but only of like the last like 6 years. It wasn't an extended format or whatever. I just kind of played kitchen table, powerful kitchen table, which then obviously moved directly into EDH, which is why I still play that now.
Well, the thing on Arena that's actually grabbed me, and I know it's done the same for you, is that they've opened up the Brawlers Guild Hall. I don't know if that's what it's called. Yeah. So they've got the Brawl format, which used to only be available on Wednesdays, but now until the 21st of May, they've opened it up just free to play any day. And I've been jamming some Brawl, and it's interesting because I was never a big fan of Brawl. I think as far as like EDH light formats go, and that's kind of condescending to say that anyway, but I mean, I think Oathbreaker is a much better representation of like what you can do with another commander based format other than EDH, and I kind of thought Brawl was a bit rubbish, to be honest with you, but as a 1v1 format, I really enjoy it. I enjoy the live totals. I'm kind of digging having a 60 card deck, like singleton 60 card deck, and one of the things that's made me really appreciate is that, because you can't, again, a bit like Standard, you can't have too many flex spots, because if you're dealing within like a Standard like legality, especially if you're playing like just regular Brawl and you've only got so many sets to pick from, if you're going into a strategy, you need to pick the best of the best for that strategy. But one of the decks I'm playing at the moment is a Taser Karlov deck, which actually shares a load of cards with my Queen Marchesa EDH deck. They're both in Ores of Colors. They're both Aristocrat decks. Like, I've got Taser Karlovs in my EDH deck. I've got Woe Strider. I have Seraph of the Scales. You know, all these different kinds of cards that really sort of make a big splashy impact in that deck. And looking at the Ores of pairing, and seeing the kinds of cards that even in a standard environment all mesh together from, like, you know, you've got the Ravnica set, so kind of at the tail end of it now, and you've got the new Ikoria stuff coming through. Like, the visual look, the flavor of Orzhov across all the different sets is super strong. Like, it looks like, visually, it looks like quite a coherent deck, which is something that a lot of standard decks or a lot of, like, high-end broad decks don't really get to do, because they're pulling in from cards from all different sort of sets and worlds. And it's just, it just kind of made me appreciate, one of the things that made me appreciate more, actually, is that, you know, we, I think we kind of give ourselves too much credit sometimes as, like, EDH players, where we craft this sort of visual aesthetic across all of our decks, and we match the sleeves and the playmat, and it all looks really cool, and it's all us. But actually, the people that make the fucking game already have this in mind. Like, they already know that certain things have a certain aesthetic. And
there's such a thing as visual appeal, and they've coined that. Yeah,
shocking. Yeah. So it's just because I play, so it's obviously it's an Orzhov deck predominantly, because it uses a lot of the Afterlife mechanic from the Ravnica set. So it's very heavy Orzhov guild. But also there are cards I run like Dranith Magistrator from the latest Ikoria set, the one which forces you not to be able to cast things from anywhere other than your hand. And even the Dranith uniform with, like, that kind of, you know, salt and pepper hair dude with the human, and he looks like he could have been in the Orzhov. Like, if that card was in Ravnica as a kind of passing glance at the aesthetic, you wouldn't think it looked too out of place. And I really appreciate that. Yeah. Cool. Well, that's not really what we're talking about today. I know we've spoken about everything except for what we're talking about today. What we're doing today, as I said earlier on, we're kind of looking to the future, really. This is still the year of Commander, even though everything's a raging bin fire right now. And we will be getting lots of Commander products. We've only just had, really, one, which was the main Commander pre-con set for the year, which is usually the big thing with all the new Commanders or a lot of reprints that we want. But this year, obviously, we've got a fucking truckload of other stuff that's coming through, and a massive opportunity for lots of new Commanders to kind of fill gaps and kind of patch over things that people want in their format, because it's going to be printed directly into EDH. Doesn't have to worry about Standard. And usually, with these kinds of products, because even things like Modern Horizons, they still use that as a place to kind of do the changelings, and they gave ninjas a bit of support.
And slivers and things like that, yeah.
Exactly. And yeah. I think one of the big things that I wish I had at my disposal is I wish there was a little, like a Star Trek, like, generator. I can't remember what they call them.
I know what you mean. Yeah, with all the foods.
I'm a fake nerd. Yeah, exactly.
That was one of those things I was like, it blew my mind as a kid. I was like, that was one of the first things where I realized sci-fi is bullshit. So I was like, that is clearly not, like, you can't just you want. Like, what, that doesn't make any sense. Even J.K. Rowling just justified that you can't just magic food from anywhere.
Yeah, sure.
Come on, Star Trek.
So what I really want is I want, like, a printing machine that if I wanted to do a tribal deck, like a certain creature type, is that I could just, you know, input, like, assassins, and the machine would just print out, like, a middle of the road would work as this commander for your tribe. I don't need anything that's game busting, and I can build whatever.
I see, like an interchangeable, basically.
Yeah, basically. And there's a lot of tribes that I just think in Magic which people really want to play, and they just don't get the opportunity, or they don't get to maybe do the deck that they want. So, like Yuriko, when that came out in the Tiger's Shadow, Tiger's Claw, Tiger's Shadow,
Tiger's Shadow.
Oh man, I've just put her in his egg. Anyway, Yuriko, she's the ninja commander, because people really wanted ninjas. They put her in a commander product, fantastic. Mm-hmm. But there are still, like, huge swathes of tribes that don't get their due. And I kind of think it's a shame. Like, EDH is the premier flavor format. And that's obviously everything that's up for debate, but I think that's kind of fair to say.
Yeah.
And one of the most flavorful ways that most people get into Magic when they first start playing, or when they kind of really want to, like, make something work, is through creature tribes. Like, it's a very recognizable fantasy thing to have your vampires and your werewolves and your goblins. And some tribes seem to get every fucking thing under the sun and get multiple commanders that could fit. Some tribes get one or two that are really good. Some tribes get a really good commander that, in my opinion, falls flat, and then they tend to just leave other ones by the wayside. And I'm just hoping in this year of Commander, they maybe give us some new blood, they give us some new commanders to play with for tribes that already have established stuff, but they also give us those commanders like Yuriko, where they can kind of go, people like this niche, we'll give them this one commander for this niche. Like, there's even a fucking Satyr commander now, Nathan. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah,
like,
Galia's
she was printed into a standard set.
I played against a Galia deck yesterday, actually. A Brawl Galia deck.
How many actual Satyrs did they have? Because in my head, there's
four. I think zero. Genuinely, I think they played none. I'm pretty sure they just played good stuff, Gruul deck. But yeah,
the only way that card makes sense in a standard environment, and they didn't just print it for Commander, is if Zendikar, we suddenly find out there's a hidden tribe of the Satyrs that live on fucking Zendikar.
don't give them excuses to make Zendikar worse.
Yeah,
so we need to bring it back to the brink, and this is not the way to do it.
I mean, hey, look, I'm really happy they did Galia, because it gives opportunities for people to build it, right? And there's lots of tribes which people will use other commanders to kind of patch that gap. Like, before Yuriko was the ninja commander, a lot of people used, what's her name? Something.
Vayla.
Yes, that's it.
Vayla of the Nightclads.
That's it. Yeah, exactly. They used her because her abilities kind of synced up with what.
Yeah, the intimidate. Yeah. Right, that Lord of Vex giving thing. Yeah.
And they've kind of. I mean, this is why we do this. We'll talk about our thoughts on it. But they've released also a few cards which I think Wizards. Maybe if they just don't have the right standard set or the right products to put in certain tribal commanders, they've given us other cards in the past where they've gone, look, we'll give you these so you can do your thing. But they don't really work out. So you have cards like older cards like Conspiracy, which is the black enchantment where you get to pick the blue version of that, which was Arcane Adaptation from Ixalan. Mm-hmm. And this, again, no cynicism against people who like this commander. Like what you like. I'm not here to yuck your yum. But for me, Morophon the Boundless was a big slap in the face to tribal players. Like, it really didn't work for me as a tribal commander in general. Like, the whole philosophy, oh, it's a changeling, so you can have anything, but you can have anything with this weird fucking blob as your leader. Like, yeah, I don't know, man. Like, it just didn't work for me.
Yeah, it does feel, it is just generic tribal.com, and it did feel a little bit like, I get, because again, it's the damned if you do, damned if you don't. Obviously, I think it was an easy way for them to go, here's a generic tribal commander for the ones that are really, really obviously unbelievably obscure, as well as the ones that maybe just need a little bit of extra help. But because it doesn't do anything particularly interesting or distinctly definitive to any particular tribe, it just does feel very bleh.
It's
like saying, like, doing like Najeela for Warrior Tribal. Like, yes, okay, of course, you can then play all five colors, but her ability doesn't actually do anything to do with warriors beyond making a warrior token. So it's not.
That's true.
It's not.
I would argue,
it's about the thematics of it, obviously. But this is
the interesting thing, though, isn't it? Because you mentioned Najeela, and you're right. On paper, she's actually a bit bland. But when you really look at what she does, where she puts things into an attack step, warriors want to attack, it's obviously quite an aggressive creature typing. Like, they don't have warrior cards which, you know, kind of combo off with each other. I mean, ironically, Najeela is a combo deck in some builds. But do you know what I mean? Like, you want things attacking. But then this is exactly one of the other sort of, like, bands of tribal commanders, which I think exists, where they thematically fit. And on paper, they tell their own little story. But for just some reason, just that little spark doesn't quite click. And this is completely subjective, like fucking everything when it comes to like Vorthosian stuff in Magic, unless it's like a literal, they fucked this storyline up. You know, when you're talking about cards, it's all to do with your own personal feeling.
Mm.
But I do think this exists. And we'll kind of talk a little bit about this throughout the episode. But you wrote a bit of an outline for this episode where I think you kind of want to talk about.
Yeah, it's more
like in general, right?
Yeah, because the way I look at it is the way I'm looking at the subject is specifically that the way that we look at tribal and the way that it kind of resonates and the way that its effectiveness works, and especially within the process of EDH, you have certain things that are not necessarily different, but certainly change the quality of whether or not tribal can work.
Yeah.
I think, as you said, to begin with, like the big thing is that you want your tribes to be relatable, and a lot of the reasons why people like will jump behind them is because, yeah, as you say, you really like goblins or you really like zombies because you for some reason have a certain affinity to them,
mm-hmm.
And it's a lot harder to have, say, an affinity for, say, like spirits or something like that. So obviously, you're going to have they're going to have more concentration in the more like typical popular tribes. And obviously the popular tribes typically that we know of, each colour has as what we call the minor and major tribes. So for green, it's elves, the major being hydras, red goblins and dragons.
Yeah.
And then you've got zombies and what was the black one? Oh, I've got the black one.
Vampires.
Demons. So yeah, humans, angels, then merfolk, and then say leviathans or krakens or whatever, as we're seeing. But can you tell me, Andy Man, what the top tribes for EDH rec are? What's the most popular tribal deck for EDH players, do you think?
If I was just to do it off the top of my head.
Yeah.
I'm going to say the top tribal deck for, just out of all tribal decks, which one of those mm-hmm. tribes gets the most decks? Mm-hmm. Elves?
Elves is fourth.
Oh, fuck off, really? What's the top three?
Dragons.
Okay.
Zombies and vampires.
See, now, yeah, well, that makes sense, right? Because dragons and zombies, both of them are huge tribes for Magic, and they have ample stuff. There are so many different and interesting zombie commanders that all do the sort of, they all kind of skirt around the same issue, but they all have their own distinct flavor. You can build them in monocolor, triple, like tricolor and dual color decks. Like, they've got all that going on. Dragons are obviously fucking infinite because they're a Magic mainstay. Obviously, you get the big ones, like you have like Sign of the Ur-Dragon and the Ur-Dragon. But you could do mono red dragons. You could do, you know, Team of Dragons, whatever the fuck you want.
Ataka.
Yeah. And there's so much stuff going on. And
Blade like, Wing.
Yeah, you could do the Boros pairing from Battle Bond. Korvath. Yeah, you could do all of that. But so, did you say what was the third? Vampires.
Yeah. Do you know what the telling thing about this is to me?
Yeah.
This is one of the big things that I'm going to come on to going forwards. Is that what did dragons and vampires get recently?
Oh, they got the commander precons.
Exactly, the Eminence Commander Precon. So obviously that's going to boost those numbers up significantly.
And you also got Jarena Lichlord. Is it Jarena? No, that's
Jarena, exactly, yeah. Varina,
that's it. You got the triple colour zombie lord, yeah.
Yeah, exactly. So obviously these are going to have, because EDH pulls a lot of information, and one of the things it pulls is like tapped out, and people upload their precons quite with a few different changes, a lot. So it will affect, obviously, having those numbers pumped up. The main reason why I asked, obviously, is because typically the thing about tribal, especially when we're talking about creature tribal, again, I'll come on to this a little bit later, that there are other ways you can kind of do tribal. But the thing about creature tribal is it does require a certain type of build. And the reason why tribal in general tends to be, because throughout the history of Magic, we've had times where you've had the Onslaught block, which was a massively tribal heavy. We had a set, Legions, which was every card in the set was a creature. We've had Lorwyn, where they did creature type and creature class tribal. And then obviously we've had various other tribal synergies going throughout Magic as well. But the main thing you've got to rely on, obviously, that typically in a limited environment, your tribal formats, be it say like Ixalan, where you're relying on merfolk and pirates, are going to have lots of individual synergies low in the curve, which doesn't necessarily translate very well to EDH. You have it went like Lord Effects, for example. We spoke about this on our White episode.
Yeah.
How Lord Effects just do not translate in power level into EDH in an effective fashion. And obviously the main reason why I think decks like dragons, zombies and vampires are quite high up is because one, that Eminence ability, which will be a big point I think we should talk about in a minute, but it's not just that, but they work almost like they kind of circumnavigate that. Dragons kind of get away with not being lower curve. They're big, big, massive hitters. Ur-Dragon lowering the cost of them automatically from the command zone, or Sign of the Ur-Dragon be able to cheat them out. I've played both types of deck. They don't play like normal tribal decks. They kind of play like battle cruiser decks. The zombie decks kind of almost run as like mid-range kind of synergy decks where you can't really get around the graveyard aspect of it.
Yeah.
And then Edgar Markov is basically a dickhead. Which is why vampire decks, because it plays a slightly different access. You have to kind of circumnavigate that base principle of aggression. Because if you're playing, say, a Krenko deck, because Goblins was number 5 on the list, yeah. Wizards being number 6. I think Wizards being number 6 is mainly because of Inala, or whatever it were, not Inala.
The Wizard Precon.
The Wizard Precon. Yeah, yeah. Exactly,
but,
yeah.
So, yeah, I mean, that Wizards are a weird one, because I did sort of think, when I was looking at this episode, I also looked at the Precons, and obviously they're a big deal, because they're recent, and they did a lot for the tribes that they kind of boosted up as well. I mean, with getting that Araboh was one for cats, and that was a godsend for that, you know, that arc.
Exactly.
Because it wasn't just Araboh, there was all kinds of stuff you could do in that deck. But the Enola one, I kind of feel like Wizards, because they do come in all five colours, and because, all right, maybe you're playing main blue, but there are enough other wizards that you could not do Enola and no one would turn their nose up at what you're doing. Whereas I've just gone to EDH Rec now to see vampire decks. And obviously EDH Rec isn't the be all and end all of like magic stats. But no. I'm looking at older mainstays, and vampires is one of the things I want to talk about later on. You have Olivia Voldaren, who's like a big vampire commander. You've got Alenda the Duskrose, you know, all these different big vampires. You've got Anawan the Ruin Sage. People go for like the staples. Like a few hundred decks compared to Edgar Markov, which is in the thousands.
Yeah, exactly. But obviously, that's weighted massively. But obviously, this is so the reason I bring this up is because if we're talking about tribal from the point of EDH, obviously that was Wizards' interpretation of a tribal cycle of commanders and a tribal cycle of commander decks and how those can work. And it's funny that out of those, one of them was arguably quite busted. I think Edgar Markov is a bit, I think that eminence ability is a bit too strong. And I think there is a certain word against that ability specifically, because the mechanic's a bit, it's inherently broken. It's like Olero. Like, people don't like the effects that you can't interact with particularly easily. And well, obviously, Markov's ability does scale quite quick.
Oh, yeah, yeah. It's a Planeswalker emblem, which you don't have to earn. You just have to sign up with the deck. Yeah. Yeah. And people don't like those emblems, you know.
No. I think what could have worked better is that you get eminence ability when it comes into play, you get the emblem, so you don't have it without it already being played. You have to play it first to get the... Obviously, it wouldn't have worked for the Ur Dragon. They'd have had to design it differently. But yeah, obviously, this is the way that they had to kind of circumnavigate the effectiveness of Tribal, knowing that it does have certain shortcomings. Like, Elves deck being number four doesn't really count, because Elves kind of like a combo deck anyway. You go... I play a Marwyn deck. You go ham. You go absolutely ham. And you're not necessarily playing fair attacking in with 2/2s, because that's not really a way that you can kind of win. But yeah, the thing that's also interesting, if we're talking like from a design point of view outside of like supplemental products, you have to be careful when you're building tribal into formats like standard environments, because you kind of have to weight a lot of the cards towards them. Either you're playing with tribes that have already existed, and you're either reprinting cards that have already been printed, or having to come up with new cards in an environment where you don't have a lot of space. And obviously then anything you do that's quite effective or particularly powerful compounds with every other card that's in the game as well. You need to make sure within the set itself it doesn't get too strong whilst also having enough support.
Yeah, this is why in this year of Commander, and they have all these supplemental sets, like you've got the Commander Legends that's coming out, we have pre-cons with every single set that's coming through, like, you know, they have a lot of opportunity to put these cards into play where they don't need to worry about the standard sets. You know, I mean, the commanders from the latest set of pre-cons for Ikoria, even though they're set on Ikoria, if you put some of those cards into the standard set, it would bust it even more busted than it already is, and it's already a fairly splashy set. So yeah, like you're 100% right, which is why I think now's the time that Wizards, I say now's the time, they designed these cards 2 years ago, but like this is the sort of section where they could have afforded to have put in some of the splashier shit. And they've already released a few things that I think will be interesting. I just hope, my big hope, and the reason I wanted to do this episode with you, is that I hope it's the tribal synergies that they really pay some sort of, you know, just respect to, because it's a big part of people's experience of playing this game.
Yeah, I think one of the things I have to focus on in that regard is they're not doing tribal synergies within standard sets, is that you don't do cards like 4-mana, 3/3, so give all of your other vampires +1/+1. You do cards like, say, Yuriko, where you get an interesting kind of trigger that requires you to... I mean, obviously, ninjas like getting in for damage, and obviously the ninjutsu ability works very well with her ability, because you're kind of getting in circumnavigating blockers. And that's what you were saying earlier about how you want the ability to have a commander that kind of plays into the theme of the tribe.
Yeah.
Like, you don't just want, like, as much as like, so zombies are a great example for this, because as you say, all of the different commanders will do something slightly different and slightly more, like the nuance is different between them.
Yeah.
But it all feels like they are doing something to, like as the character works within the tribe,
and they work with the whole tribe as a whole. Like, you don't, not every zombie goes in every zombie deck, but for every zombie that's out there, there's a commander which will make it like really sing, because there's been so much support, because that is one of the most popular tribes, you know, and you can have zombies on any plane and it will make sense to a certain degree, you know.
And it's really important as well to note that, say, having a card like Verena in was really great, because then it added a whole extra color to the tribe.
Yeah,
we've said before how sometimes adding more colors makes a card more powerful, and it makes it too ubiquitous. Say, like Tulane, for example, is a good example of a card that didn't need to be all three colors. Had you taken away one of the other colors, it probably would have made it a little bit more, not less abusive, but it would have made it narrower, and you'd have had to a bit more focused. Whereas something like Verena, it allows you to kind of move the tribe into areas it hasn't had a chance to work with before, like say things like Anointed Procession to double up your tokens, things like Etchings of the Chosen if you want to do something like that. Like, there's that kind of idea, and this is where tribal support going forward, especially in EDH, can be quite helpful, because you can do say a green red elf, or a green black elf, or a green blue elf, and allow then your and it has an elf tribal effects and an interaction and a synergy, and if you allow, and then it allows you to spread all of your tribe into a whole new color and to do new things with it. Say like when needed with fairies, adding a bit of green to them, and it kind of adds some flexibility, and it allows you to kind of stretch the space a little bit more. Sure. So I wouldn't mind seeing that going forwards. I think that there's enough just generic, your creatures get a bonus and then you can tap three of them for a certain ability kind of thing.
Sure. Well, I mean, I know you used elves there just as an example to highlight your point just to use a creature type, but elves is also actually a good example of how they have done that. Because if you look at, you say you run your monogreen Marwyn elf ball deck, and then, you know, some people also run like things like Rishkar and whatever else. There's 100 elf commanders, but you also then have things like Rhys the Redeemed and Hiltleaf, who are in different colors. Like, they're in, you know, white green or black green, and or is it they're always still using green, obviously, but yeah, they still have their own flavor and their own function, whilst none of them are particularly dominant. Rhys the Redeemed might be like the most popular elf commander, but again, if you turn up with your Marwyn elf ball deck or any other mono green elf deck and say, oh, this is elves, no one's going to look at you and go, but why are you playing that one and not this one? Like, they
exactly
their own thing.
Yeah, my Marwyn deck specifically has been interchanged. It started as a Fraley's deck, and then I've moved from... I mean, you can move to basically any of them. I've played with Yaver before at the head as well, depending on the circumstance.
Yeah.
Like, obviously, it depends on what you want your deck to do. And obviously, it depends on the density of your deck as well. Like, obviously, Elves has got to a point where it's not necessarily solved, but it's close. Like, there are very few Elves that you kind of like go, well, I'll play this one specifically for this reason. Usually you play them because it's the better elf to play.
I'll tell you what I think my sort of big signifier is to see whether a tribe needs either fresh blood or needs help, like in general, or whether it's been solved or not as like a deck archetype, is if you take most tribal decks, if you just go on EDH Rec and see like the sort of generic builds that people do and see how many of those tribal decks also run things which are generically good for tribes, so things like Vanquisher's Banner, Icon of Ancestry, Door of Destinies, all that kind of stuff. If you see a zombie deck and say 40% of all zombie decks run Icon of Ancestry, then you think, okay, it's fairly strong, but not everyone needs to do it. It's only the majority. But then you look at fucking Snake Tribal or Ninja Tribal, and every single one of those decks runs an Icon of Ancestry. You need to maybe step back and go, oh, okay, maybe the tribe doesn't stand up on its own.
Yeah, and there's not enough diversity.
There's not enough diversity in it. And again, like, they only have so much space for like these builds, right? I just think it'd be fun for them to do kind of cool things. I mean, are there any tribes which you would want to see like get something new or get a commander at all that's not just fucking Morophon? Like, do you know what I mean?
I liked the idea of that we're getting more dogs, and I wouldn't mind like a hound commander. I think it would be quite good, but we've obviously had the argument of there are too many different types of dog. What I did like is I liked the idea that came out with I forgot what the name is, the Selesnya Companion. The one that specifically cares about cats, beasts, nightmares. I like that because it ties multiple creature types together. As much as it irks me that werewolves and wolves usually get lumped together, it does obviously help fuse those kind of things together. I mean, I'm not looking in, I don't want to see more creature type like species type tribal. I want to see more class tribal.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Expand on that.
Right, so basically, because obviously you've got a lot of like soldier tribals, quite a big thing. Recently, knight tribals obviously been quite a big thing. I was looking at kind of the cards that seem to evoke more of a flavor. And it's little things like, say, Azami, where you have to tap an untapped wizard to draw a card. The fact that wizards specifically do like knowledge and it plays into that. Or Seton, Crows and Protector, is a druid lord. And you can tap an untapped druid to add a green mana. We've got Guiltleaf Arc Druid, where you can tap 7 untapped druids to gain control of all lands target player controls. As much as that is a douchey nonsense ability, those are the kind of things that I quite like. And this is why I like Lorwyn a lot, because it allowed the blend in the format of not just having to worry about, oh, have I got enough goblins? You could go, oh, have I got enough warriors? And you have warriors across multiple different creature types. I think class support's quite interesting, because we've got to a point now where each plane has a very tends to have a very distinctive type of goblin or a very distinctive type of elf or whatever. And those kinds of things can be different, but then the creature types always seem to do the same kind of things, whereas I think the class has way more flavor, and you can do way more with, say, I don't know, assassin tribal than you could with just minotaur tribal.
It's funny you say that. Assassin tribal is going to be something I'm gonna float your way. I've got a few ideas for it, but carry on.
So the other things that I kind of want to look into, apart from like, say, class tribal, things like keyword tribal, that's another one that I think is quite interesting. What I like is that we've seen cards like Arcades, where you can then suddenly walls, as much as the creature, as much as the ability is the tribal, obviously it's a walls deck, and I like the fact that you can then do things like that, where you suddenly make a subset of creatures that were complete not useless, because you could play Doran or whatever.
Oh,
but it did
God.
Open up a massive deck opportunity.
Do you know what, like, I didn't even fucking think of this, mate. Sorry to cut you off. We're talking about I hope this underrated tribe gets this commander, and this fucking creature tribe's fighting for the scraps. We live in a fucking magic world where wall tribal, fucking wall tribal, has three viable competitive commanders in Arcades, Doran the Siege Tower, and fucking Pramacon the floating hologram.
Oh, I forgot about Pramacon,
Do you know what I fucking mean? Like, why has this fucking creature type got three commanders which people can play around with? They're all way different as well. Like, oh my fucking God. And yet I can't get a werewolf commander to save my fucking ass.
I was wondering how long we
were. No. Werewolves are coming. I'm waiting for you to get out your interesting shit before I bore everyone with my rants.
Yeah. Well, the other thing I was looking at is like, so looking outside the box of what we think of in terms of tribal, because obviously we're going to come back down to creatures, I'm sure, but where my headspace started to go after that, because I started to look at things like, would you count like Enchantress decks, for example? I would consider that to be a specific, like a tribe of sorts.
Would you?
Like, because I think even things like Affinity, I would consider to be a tribe of sorts. Like tribal.
No, but now you're going down play styles, you see.
No. This is specifically, obviously, the play style of tribal. And this is where the debate is. And this is where I think I want the flexibility to be. Is I don't want it just to be cumulative advantage, like Affinity is. Like, the more of a certain thing you have, the better, the better your advantage is, with all the enchantments that all stack up together. You don't want all your creatures just be giving each other like +1/+1. You want what I'm asking basically is, the reason why I would count those as tribal, because it kind of sits into that typical creature tribal design. And I think that EDH needs to be moving away from your typical swing your creature sideways. Basically, it's the Boris argument. Yeah. Try and give some flexibility to your play style, and try and use creatures outside of, say, like something like Persistent Petitioners. That's a great tribal deck. Or a Shadowborn Apostle deck. That's a great tribal deck. Like Clerics, for example, are really interesting, because you can move down that Shadowborn Apostle Athreos path if you want to. Or you can do the Ailey Sacrifice thing. Those are the kind. This is why I think classes are a little bit more interesting, because I think the problem with creature types is typically the way to go with them is that you do combat buffs. Like all your creatures get first strike, all your zombies have death touch. Like, great, awesome, fantastic, don't care.
See, that's interesting that you say that, because I 100% agree. Like, I'm fully on board. I think just doing creature buffs for every creature, or just doing that, pump out a token, go kind of thing, is what makes a lot of these boring. But I agree with you in a completely different way. I think the flavor really is with the creature types. And I suppose this kind of does kind of...
I'm not saying it's a bad... You want the flexibility.
You want the flexibility.
Yeah. So like, the worst offender of this is Slivers, because they have the most variety out of any creature type, but all they do is the exact same thing.
Yeah, but people like that because that's...
But you know what I mean? It's like you have the variety, but it's the exact same amount of variety.
Yeah, no, I get what you mean. Like, but, you know, I suppose, yeah, people find that kind of... that idea of them pretty cool. So like my whole thing with the kind of abilities, which you still want them to be flavorful, but obviously you need it to work, which is why a lot of these kind of sort of second tier, maybe third tier tribes, even some of the like the big tribes, a lot of their commanders fall flat. It's because their abilities don't scale with EDH as a game. And so so vampires are a perfect example of where you had super fucking sweet flavorful commanders in things like Olivia Voldaren, who is a vampire that entrances humans over to your side and then bites them and turns them into fucking vampires. And you look at that card and you're like, my fucking God, whoever designed that, I hope they got a fucking holiday bonus, because that is a sweet ass magic card for a vampire. You put that in a commander deck and it might be the most flavorful commander deck in the world, but as soon as it goes up against someone's Edgar Markov deck, it's lacking a color, it's not aggressive enough, it's not competitive enough. Then you look at Edgar Markov as a card, and to its credit, Edgar Markov is the progenitor of vampires on Innistrad, and he is the one that kind of like fortified them as a species on that plane when they started. So what does his card do? It creates vampires, and it gives them 1-1 counters. It buffs them up, and 1-1 counters, weirdly, for a tribe that's predominantly in Mardu colors, is quietly one of the most +1/+1 counter heavy tribes in Magic. Like, there are so many vampire cards across all different sets that deal with 1-1 counters. So it, on the face of it, it looks like it should be doing what it's doing. But it's what I was saying before, where that little spark just doesn't seem to really grab into it. Not in the same way that things like Olivia do. And the things
it doesn't have texture.
No, it just doesn't. And there's other vampire cards which you can look at where you see what Edgar Markov does and you think, yeah, okay, on the face of it, that's really cool, but why doesn't it spark for me? And then you look at something like Bloodline Keeper, which is a 4-drop 3/3 vampire, and it's one of the classic vampire cards. It's one of the big parts of the Edgar Markov deck, but it's a flip card for a start, which the transforming vampires are obviously the most interesting because cards that transform are brilliant. And it creates vampires. You tap it to create a vampire, then you transform it when you have enough of them, and on the other side, it buffs the vampires, and you can still keep creating them. And it tells this whole story arc in a way that's not busted, but it's also not shit, and it works for what you need it to do. Now, imagine if you turned Bloodline Keeper into a Mardu or a Rakdos vampire. You stick Legendary on it, and maybe it has haste, so you can tap it straight away. So basically, if you turn it into a completely different card, is what I'm saying.
If you make it better, it's better, right?
If you make it a legendary version of what it is already, but you put it into the colors where you can start branching out. Imagine if that was your commander. Like, I mean, we're not game designers, obviously. Like, that could be totally fucking busted. But I think you would see so many more people playing that version of the deck, even if it's necessarily worse than the Edgar Markov decks, because the people who really love Edgar Markov and what it does, and really appreciate what it is, and by the way, I do as well. The Volkan Barger art is fucking phenomenal.
Yeah.
The people that would keep playing that deck would be the people who really like it. And the people who play the Bloodline Keeper deck or a new Olivia would play those instead. And then they'd all have a fucking house party over how much they love vampires. I fucking love vampires. But I don't want to build the Edgar Markov deck. And I don't want to build anything that... I mean, I play a lot of EDH. Like, some of my decks are lower powered, some of them are more powerful. I want my vampire deck to fucking rock, you know?
Yeah,
and that's why I think.
Well, I think that's why inherently, like, Inala's like a more interesting commander than Edgar Markov, because Edgar Markov, well, no matter what vampire you make, you get 1/1.
Yeah,
with Inala, you get double wizards on whatever wizard you play, and your wizards are probably going to be interesting.
Yeah,
Eo Dragon, okay, everything's a little bit cheaper, and then with the cat deck, okay, everything just gets a little bit bigger. Like, I guess that's the point. Is it's like, you know, are you offering generic abilities or are you offering something that's a little bit more in keeping with the theme of the tribe, not just making that tribe.
I suppose the thing with Araboh, Araboh is an interesting one because it gives a commander which has cat support on it. But unfortunately, like Edgar Markov, it's like exactly what we're saying. It doesn't do anything with the cats that's particularly interesting. Like, Edgar Markov doesn't do anything with the vampires that's particularly interesting. Yeah.
Look at Hungry Lynx, for example. Yeah. Hungry Lynx is one of the most flavorful cat cards ever.
Yeah, super cool.
But yeah, I guess, and this is actually leads me on to like this idea of nuance. Like, because one of the big things that annoyed me about tribal was the fact of tribal. Like, they card type tribal rather than the idea of tribal. And I'm kind of disappointed because I know that it's basically it's been made defunct. They're not going to bring it back again because it was a bit too complicated. But what I liked about this was this idea of being able to take spells like enchantments, sorceries, instants, and adding this flavor of a tribe onto them. Like, one of the things I really like is Not From This World, which is the Eldrazi, one of the Eldrazi instant tribal cards. And it's basically 7 mana. And if you cast it on a creature that has 7 or more power, it costs 7 less. You can cast it for 3. And it basically gives the creature hexproof. And it basically is like a free hexproof on your big dude. And what I like the idea of is it's a big, massive 7 mana instant spell. It's basically just like, you know, like a merge unscathed or a God's Willing or whatever. But the fact that you, if you cast it on something huge, it basically doesn't cost anything because it's using Eldritch ability. That idea is amazing. Like Boggart Shenanigans, for example.
Yeah.
2 and a red for a tribal enchantment. So it's a goblin itself, and it sits in play whenever a goblin leaves the battlefield. I think it specifically dies whenever a goblin you control dies. It does 1 damage to a target opponent. Amazing. And the idea of that you get an enchantment that has a theme of a goblin to it. These are the kind of things that I really like, and it's a shame that they didn't carry it on. So yeah. I feel like these are the kinds of things, like with legendary sorceries, that can give the other things other than the creatures tribal importance, relevance, and synergy. So I think that's a big thing I think they miss. And as much as I don't think they'll bring it back in Commander, I think it's one of the few places you could bring back tribal and it not feel out of place.
Oh no, 100%. I really hope
going forward they do some of this, because it's little things like the Bounding Silence, being able to search out a pacifism effect with your rebel searches. It's little synergies like that that make a tribe feel really cool. Because you're not just playing your rebels, but you've been able to go and search a rebel spell.
Yeah, 100%.
You know, that's the kind of thing that I think is missing sometimes with tribal synergies that are built around more limited and standard environments, rather than obviously the more explosive and more, you know, complicated formats, I should say.
It's not just that. It's not just about it being like more explosive or being splashier. It's that fact that I think if you ask a lot of standard players, like, They could tell us Commander players that they want us to get our fucking Commander out of their standard a little bit. Like, I think these...
No, I completely agree.
I think these supplemental sets are going to do a world of good for a lot of people. There is a huge voice, and it's actually one that I think is a lot of merit to it, and I do agree with up to a point. There's lots of people that think that WotC shouldn't design for Commander at all, and that instead they should just do their sets as usual, and as we've been doing up until maybe the last 2 years, we'll see which standard cards, we'll see which limited cards make the cut for Commander in terms of what we need for our format, and we'll build around then, and that actually is some more interesting builds. I think that's fairly valid. I just kind of think the fucking genie's out of the bottle of that now.
Yeah. Well, the problem with that as well is that then you stop building cards for casual play. If you just build every card to ignore EDH specifically for standard, you're not building cards that you can play at a kitchen table, you know?
So
I feel like you can't, and also they're very much under the impression awareness that EDH is one of, if not the most popular format to play Magic. Yeah. So if they'll be doing themselves obviously a misservice, and I think especially with the way that they've been designing some standard sets, you could be pushing people away from it. That might be a big reason why EDH is more popular, because it's just a general increased feel bad on how like standard formats are feeling, maybe. And this is coming from someone who has a very subjective opinion, because I don't necessarily play, but from what I can tell, like, I think obviously it doesn't, EDH offers you a bit more freedom and fun, so I think if everyone's feeling a bit under the weather and power creep and everything,
like, I think there's two answers to that whether you're right or not. Either you are right and standard's in a bad place right now, which is very likely, although we don't know that because we don't play it, or standard players are potentially, shock horror, maybe just as whingy about their format as EDH players are about theirs, and maybe it's
shockingly,
Magic again, players in Magic general people, and Magic not for that thing
to complain.
Yeah. It could be that. I think maybe it's that, because there have definitely been. I mean, it's this is completely off subject. I actually kind of am disgusted with myself that I just use that as a get out of jail free card, because it kind of means that whenever players are unhappy with their format, you can just kind of go, oh, Magic players whinge all the time. And there are some very valid criticisms about all formats, pretty much always, because there's always room to improve. I just kind of think that maybe, if we all just fucking chilled out just a little bit and didn't jump on things as soon as they were printed, then maybe, you know, the magic world would be a little bit of a better place. Or it'd be a fucking hell. Well, it could be that or a fucking hellscape. I don't really know, but there we are. Right. We
I've got two little questions, basically.
All right.
One, how do you feel about things like the Kindred Cycle, things like Cavern of Souls, which basically just help every tribe out in an incremental fashion without particularly being specific to any particular tribe?
So I think about those in the same way that I think about things like Icon of Ancestry or Vanquisher's Banner and all that kind of thing, which is I don't hate them because they give support to tribes and they are very useful, especially if you're playing in, say, colours which you need a boost. But that's exactly it. I would treat those the same way that you treat sort of like off-color draw spells or artifact draw spells for colors that don't have card draw.
Yeah, I think the same with Shared Animosity or Mana Echoes, things like that, where you're probably just using it as a generic powerful effect. It's not necessarily...
If you need a tutor for your... I mean, we're in green for shared kindred summons, so obviously this isn't true because you have other things as well. But say if you need your efficient tutor effect to get you out of a jam, but you're playing a tribal deck, you should probably play Kindred Summons over, say, Shared Summons, which is the other one, right? Yeah. That's the 5-mana one.
But you shouldn't play over Genesis Wave.
No. If you're playing an elf deck, you probably don't need it. But if you're playing a werewolf deck or a cat's deck, Kindred Summons might be something that you want to consider playing. Yeah. That's what I think.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. Yeah. So basically, the only other thing I had left was looking at kind of like favorite tribal commanders of like recent times and why I like them and then what I could potentially and why I kind of like them, what I would like to see from that similar kind of thing going forwards. The first one being Varina, the fact that they added an extra color to a tribe that didn't necessarily have it already and offered a lot more opportunity for flexibility. I think, again, tribal is one of the few things where I think adding extra colors is a good thing. I had Kamina as well. It's not necessarily the best merfolk deck commander, but I think that it does multiple different things, like being able to draw cards, have unblockability, all that kind of nonsense. It just does a lot of different things. That's the kind of thing that EDH
is the one where you tap merfolk to make things unblockable and
all that nonsense.
He's very good.
I can't remember what the middle ability is off the top of my head. One second.
The thing with merfolk is that they're one of those kind of they're one of those long staple tribes that kind of aren't necessarily the most explosive at any given time, but they're always very, very good. A bit like elves, really. And Kamina as a commander, there have been lots of merfolk commanders that do interesting shit that you can run as your tribal commander. But he was the one which, when if you really want to lean into it, then here's what I do. And I'm not just, you know, I'm not just that one effect of get a merfolk. What does he do? What's his thing?
Yeah, so you can tap another to make him unblockable. So you can go Voltron route and get him big and pumpy. Tap three to draw a card, so you get yourself a bit of card advantage. Tap five to put a +1/+1 counter on each merfolk. So not only you have anthem effects, you have card advantage, and you've got an ability to go tall as well as go wide by just going in pan with him.
Yeah.
So it's that opportunity, that ability to
go multiple directions. I think it's really good. And if they use that as a standard for other kind of cards going forward, I think it's a really good place to be flavor-wise.
The other one I had, which is weird, which is I only really thought about, it was Bruderclad Mir Tribal.
Oh, sure.
Because it doesn't necessarily boost your Mir, but the fact that all Mir do something better incrementally by having more of them, whether it's propagation, things like Mir Battle Sphere. This, like, if you look at all of the different Mirs, apart from the ones like Mir Galvanizer, which you obviously gives +1/+1 and nonsense, they all have like tap abilities and copy abilities and all this nonsense. You can go kind of a little bit crazy. And the fact that Bruderclad itself is the only legendary Mir you can play, I thought that today, I was like, man, if you didn't already play a Bruderclad deck, I'd be like, yeah, actually, I might build a Mir deck. Because I've been wanting to build a Mir deck for years, and I hadn't even thought about it until today.
Do it, because it will be a different build. I mean, my Bruderclad deck, weirdly enough, it's not, I wouldn't say it's a tribal deck, because I think tribal decks, for me, if you're saying tribe as opposed to theme, if you're for just generic synergy, it kind of does need to be shared creature types. But my Bruderclad deck, I made a decision when I built it, is that I didn't want to include any cards that didn't create artifact tokens for Bruderclad. So everything's an artifact token. Not all the creatures are artifact creatures. And I have cheated slightly by putting Trading Post in, which technically makes a goat, but I use the other abilities anyway. So you could technically say that my Bruderclad deck is artifact tribal as opposed to artifact synergy.
You could say it was token tribal, you know.
I guess
that's another thing, is like looking at things like Power 4 or greater tribal and things like that. Obviously, we're looking at creature types, rather than say, as you say,
well, like that is where my sort of line, I think, goes. I agree.
Yeah, I think the problem, obviously, is that when it comes to creature types, there's only so much that you can do with creatures to make them viable and competitive. I think, obviously, Boris is a good example of how just relying on the combat step isn't a great way to have diversity across your playstyle, weirdly enough.
Sure.
So, yeah, I guess the big thing is, as Gophers, is just looking to see ways to expand tribes into areas that they haven't necessarily been before.
Well, I'll tell you what, we're running a little bit out of time. I say that, we're not. We've got all the fucking time in the world. But in our arbitrary like clipping of like how much time we have left, I'm gonna give you two tribes which I want to see. I mean, I've already spoken about vampires, so yeah. I want to see better vampire, not better. That's a fucking wanky way to say that. I want to see different vampire tribal commanders. That's the new blood I want to see. And I think we might get that with Baron Sengir. We know we're getting Baron Sengir in.
Yeah, that's a good point, actually.
So we might. Yeah. They might not do vampires with him. And
we might get feral vampires on Zendikar. Who knows? We might get
the
long-awaited black-green vampires.
Fucking hell. Do you know what? I would build a green-black deck of vampires.
Do you know what I thought? This bounty guy that we saw, the hunter from Ikoria, he could have very easily have been a vampire. You could have flexed him into being a vampire kind of.
Sure, I guess. But then he's obviously Ikoria, isn't it? You could have had that.
Yeah, I know.
So that's my new blood, is the vampires. And then these two tribes are tribes that I've always loved and I think need a commander which, you know, raises all of the creatures and not just keep it super narrow. Because the problem with some of these commanders is that whilst you could technically say that they're a tribal commander, because they're so narrow within their own tribe, they kind of just make it, oh, well, no, it's a commander with these cards instead of just the tribe itself. Mm. So one of them's going to be werewolves. Fucking spoiler alert. I'll do that one last. My first one, and you actually mentioned it earlier on, is assassins. I fucking love assassins. Very close to ninjas. If I had my way in a perfect world, if I had a time machine, I'd go back and tell whoever was about to design assassins and or ninjas, just make them the same fucking thing. Or like, you know, do an errata. All ninjas are assassins, or the other way around, or whatever. Yeah. I really fucking love assassins. And I had a 60-card kitchen table deck of assassins, which was blue-black, and it had had Royal Assassin, had Agent of Fates, it had Scarblade Elite. And the thing that a lot of these had in common, and actually the whole deck kind of took on, was it was a tap deck. It was tap and untap. Agent of Fates, Royal Assassin, Scarblade Elite, and the legendary Kiku, Knight's Flower, which is a black-black for a 1-1 human assassin. And it has two black-black tap. Target creature deals damage to itself equal to its power. And the thing that all of these shared is that they relied on things that were tapped. Either the creature it was destroying was a tapped, or it had its own tap effect. And that kind of felt very sort of, like, that was a nice thing that all of the tribe shared for a tribe that didn't really have anything else going for it. You then have more recent assassins, which are into the battlefield or have blink synergies. So you have Masako is obviously is a blinky commander. She comes in the battlefield, she board wipes everything. And then the other one I thought was quite interesting was Atrata the Silencer, which is the Dimir one, where when she attacks, she's unblockable, she attacks in, and then she gets shuffled back into the deck. But if you blink her with her ability on the stack, or if you flick her or bring her back to your hand or whatever, then that doesn't happen and you still get her like her effect, right? So all of these different things could kind of work with blink decks. And like, you know, because you can blink other people, opponents' creatures, or you can tap her on tap things. So I was thinking if you could have an assassin, legendary assassin, probably Dimir colors, that would probably work the best, although there are red assassins as well, but whatever. So you could do Grixis, but it wouldn't be something like all assassins get +1/+1, and it would.
No, I've got an idea.
So my idea is this.
Yeah.
And obviously this is me doing this on the fly, I'm not a card designer, but it would be a five drop assassin, just to make it fairly costed, or a four drop maybe, and it would be, you know, something like colorless Grixis for like a 2/2 or a 1/3 assassin, and it had two lines of ability. So it'd have a keyword, which would be haste, so it'd be hasty. The first ability would be tap this creature and destroy target creature on it, or destroy target tapped creature, that'd probably be better. And the second line of text would be all other assassins have tap, destroy tap creature. So you don't need to necessarily play a whole bunch of like tokens. You don't need to swamp your board with a whole bunch of assassins. You could just keep it to like a tight 20 to 25 creatures, because a lot of the problems with tribal decks is that you need to have like 30 to 40 of the same creature, whereas with this one,
well, yeah, you need a saturation level.
Yeah, with this one you just need a few good ones that you can get out reliably, and then you can play the whole rest of the deck with bounce effects, so you can tap your assassin and then you can bounce it to bring it back so it's like ready for the block, or you could have it where you can play your Atratas and your Massacre Girls so you can bounce shit. You could have tap and untap effects as well, so you can tap things down to attack in, or tap another person's, you know, creature to be able to destroy the assassin, you know, all these different kinds of things. The Agent of Fates, I'm not going to go through the whole thing with Agent of Fates, but it's got lots of triggered abilities when it gets targeted with spells, and it works really well with a cipher card called Hidden Strings from Return to Ravnica. So you can have all this kind of stuff going on. And I think it'd be a really nice way that you don't have to keep attacking. You don't have to swamp the board of tokens. It just, you know, you can have your board state and it's just all these assassins sniping around and dealing little bits of damage and tapping and untapping. And it'd create a play experience that wasn't just swamp the board with vampires, swing in with your vampires, you know?
Yeah, I like it.
I kind of ranted on that one. Did that make sense?
Yeah, I like it, yeah. Cool. My go-to was... that you'd want, obviously, your tappers, you'd be able to destroy a creature. But what I thought about is, instead of it being destroy a creature, what about, obviously, you want situations where if there aren't any creatures in play, what does it do? Yeah. It taps to deal two damage to each opponent, or like one damage to each opponent, and then their next spell costs two more to cast, so it impedes them, like the players. And then it has an ability, return target assassin you control to your own to its owner's hand to untap target creature.
Oh, that'd be quite good. Yeah.
So you have a way to protect your assassins if they get targeted by bouncing them back, to be able to tap to untap your other assassins if you need to, or you can untap itself to then make to attack your opponents again for the next one. So you could have it that say maybe tap deals one damage to each opponent each. Then the next play the next spell they cost one more, and you can stack it. So obviously the next it taxes them bit by bit. So it doesn't just affect. So obviously your other assassins are the ones that are going to have to deal with the creatures, and she rather goes for. Or I assume it's a she. I don't know why. In my mind, it's a she.
I think most of the legendary assassins are women characters.
Yeah, I like the idea of it. Yeah, obviously you want something that when you look through the rest of the cards works with all of them, but obviously offers a new direction to take them, and rather than just more of the same.
Sure.
What's your idea for a werewolf?
Well, I don't have an idea for a werewolf, man. This is the thing. Like, it's such a hard one because you're dealing with transform abilities. So like the werewolf commander that we got. Was
what color? What colors are? What colors is it?
Oh, what colors? What colors do I want? Or what colors do we get?
Yeah. Now, who says you're going to get one? You're not getting one, Andy.
No. What I'm saying is, you like. Well, we had so the one that we had before we get into that is Uruk of the Kralan Horde, which was the Gruul legendary from Shadows of Innistrad, and he just didn't seem to. He pumped things up, and he had a transform effect.
Yeah, big boy make thing bigger,
but nothing on him. He's the fucking alpha of like the Kralan Horde.
Yeah. Werewolf. Yeah, it should have been Huntmaster of the Fells.
And he doesn't have any werewolf or wolf synergies. Like, fucking bollocks. Anyway, the colours I would have a werewolf commander in, if I could have whatever I wanted, would be Jund, probably. So I could play the... I know we've already spoken about this. I know.
So you could play the OG ones. Yeah.
Well, you play the OG ones, and you could also play a lot of the Golgari Garrix, because he's got a lot of wolf synergies as well.
Yeah.
I think that'd be pretty cool. I think that'd flavor. And... I was looking at, so the same way that I did with Bloodline Keeper and Lord of Lineage for the vampires, I was looking at Greereach Bandit for the werewolves. So Greereach Bandit is a rare human rogue werewolf, which is just such a cool creature typing. And it's two and a red for a 3/2 human rogue werewolf. Has haste, has the usual werewolf thing of at the beginning of each upkeep, if no spells were cast last turn, transform Greereach Bandit. And on the flip side, the Vilden Pack Alpha, the werewolf side, it has, whenever a werewolf enters the battlefield under your control, you may transform it. So it's kind of one of the big downsides of playing werewolves is that although you get to double up on your cards, although you get big splashy effects, the transform is quite clunky and it's quite difficult. And obviously, it's easier because by and large, it's considered that the werewolf side is more potent, even though that's, you know, the whole play about werewolves is that both sides have ups and downsides. I think something like that, not that, because that's a bit too...
But something like that.
You would have something like... Yeah. Where the Pack Alpha would be something like... It'd probably look a lot like Uruk of the Kralan Horde, but then it would also have a line of text that would say, pay two, transform all... You may transform any number of creatures. And then if you just left it at creatures and not necessarily werewolves or wolves, you could
then you could flex it,
punch out into other transform creatures,
yeah,
transforming vampires, wizards, whatever, and that would be a nice way of doing a tribal commander, which people would gravitate for flavor reasons towards werewolves, but then yeah. people that wanted to do their own thing or maybe just have a pure gameplay perspective and thought, well, you've got fucking Delver of Secrets and all these other things that are much better. But, you can put those in as well, you know?
So you want a more, so you want a more generic transform tribal commander rather than something specifically referencing werewolves?
I want...
I think that's I think that's the thing that would be difficult is because you, the problem with werewolves is you have the flip, the printing issue of the flipness of it.
I suppose what I would do then is maybe say pay two, transform any number of target creatures you control, unless it's a werewolf, in which case you pay a red.
Okay, right. Okay, too much.
No, it is too much. I'm overthinking it. But maybe. But I would say that's much better. That's still in keeping of being a tribal commander, because you can still have all your other buffs from your other vampires buffing your commander up whilst it still like mushes together.
Plus, there are so many werewolves that give bonuses to each other anyway that you don't necessarily need it to do that generic thing.
Yeah.
And also, Ulrich did the whole, oh, give a creature bonus. The thing that they wanted is they wanted it to interact with the thing that made werewolves different, which is that flip ability.
Yeah.
So you want your tribal commander to be more in keeping with that theme of flipping rather than just, oh, it replaces birds with werewolves and it gives them plus one instead, you know? Sure. That kind of thing. Yeah, no, I know what you mean. I get what you mean. I don't necessarily think it's going to happen. I do.
I mean, I've said this before.
Should we place a bet now that by the end of the year there'll be a werewolf commander?
Yeah, all right, fiver.
All right, okay, I was going to say 10, but okay, yeah, all right, fiver, fine.
Dude, these uncertain times, I want to keep as much money as I can. Sure, I think there will be. And, like... I ragged on Morophon at the start of the episode. If people play Morophon, I know there's a couple of people in our play group that have cat decks that play Morophon because it's subjectively better than a lot of the cat commanders. And if that's your jam, that's your jam. I just kind of thought, I mean, it was literally, it has a five-color commander that had a colorless border. And to me, that just said it all. Like, without saying much more. I was like, okay. So
it's all the colors, but it's basically none of the colors.
It's basically none of them. I would have rather it looked more like a Ditto as well. Like, if they really wanted to do something that was just an amorphous blob.
Could it possibly look more like a Ditto? It's basically a pink blob.
No, it's not, though, because they've given it really specific features, and it creeps me out. I would rather
it reminds me a lot of the Spirit of the Forest from Princess Mononoke.
Yeah, freaky as fuck. Yeah, are you kidding? But there we go. Yeah. So that's it then, I guess. That's our little kind of deep dive down into tribal commanders. Obviously, we'll be doing way more episodes on things like, you know, tribal synergies. Probably a lot more episodes on individual tribes. I know I want to do things like zombies. I know you've got a few things in mind as well.
Yeah, I want to do clerics, I think. I want to have a little look at clerics.
Yeah, but clerics are cool, man. So we will be doing a lot more episodes on tribes specifically, and we'll probably be talking more in those episodes as well about where we want to see the tribe go, where it's been, and all that kind of stuff before. Other than that, guys, I just want to say we've had a lot of people getting in touch with us directly through our Twitter, whether it's DMs or just on the Twitter page, just generally shooting the shit, whether it's about Magic, or we've had a few people kind of, you know, talking to us about doing these episodes, especially in these trying times. Like, us doing the podcast is really good for us because it keeps us busy, keeps our mental health nice and sort of in a line. And we've had people that have very kindly, and like, we're overwhelmed by it, have been telling us that our podcast is kind of cheering them up and it's helping them out. So, like, we really appreciate it. We really appreciate you guys listening and helping us go in contact with us. Like, I mean, you know, the only other way to say it is, like, we fucking love you. Like, we love everyone that listens to this podcast.
Cheers, fam.
Yeah, cheers, fam.
Us giving you smiles gives us smiles. So.
Yeah, exactly. In the most emotionally repressed way possible, we love you. And if you want to get in contact with us, either to tell us that we're great or to tell us that we suck, like, we all need a bit of objective realism in our lives. Like, please do get in touch with us.
And we take criticism really well.
Yeah, oh yeah, super well, super well. We won't be throwing our laptops at the walls at all. So there we go. guys, we don't run a Patreon because of various reasons that we've always outlined in this episode. We might do one in the future, but we don't do right now. So the best ways to support this episode, guys, and we really want your support as well, because A, it shows us that we do have people listening, and B, it helps us to create better content for you to listen to, is if you're listening to us on iTunes, hit that review button. I'm terrible at giving things reviews, and I know everyone is because it's a pain in the ass. But if you could do it for us, that'd be really great. If you're on iTunes, give us a review and 5-star. It will help our show pop up to more people. share this content with your friends, whether it's old episodes that you're just listening to now because you've joined us recently, or if you've been listening to us for a long time, do share it out with your friends. We know it works because we've seen it happen with our own listenership, so please keep doing so. I'm currently trying to get all my family to listen to it because they have no idea what it is that I do day in, day out with my week, and I want them to be disappointed with a bit of evidence. So there we go. And they can hear what it is. Follow us on Twitter. Do hit that follow button. We are holding, so every couple of days, we'll stick out a Twitter poll with a hypothetical question, and we've been getting a lot of responses. Some of them are great. Some of them, I put out like a negative answer as a joke, and then lots of people vote for that answer. So the most recent Twitter poll, Nathan, I put out, so you don't always see all of them, is I put out the drinking buddy. Who would be the best Planeswalker drinking buddy? And I put Gideon. No, I didn't. That's a lie. I put Liliana, Dak Faden, Xenagos, and then the last option I put terrible options. So like if people thought, oh, those are terrible options, and they put their own one, they could click that one. I thought that was kind of self-effacing. That one got like a third of the vote.
Basically, we didn't decide our options weren't good enough. They were like, no.
I opened myself up literally for that response. So yeah, thanks guys, message received. But we do lots of different Twitter polls, so please do get involved. And yeah, just generally, guys, get in touch. We want to hear from you. Other than that, Nathan, do you have any final words for this episode?
No, not really. I've been watching a lot of other content as well recently. If you haven't been watching 8 Spice Rack and you don't know who that person is, go and look them up because good, really enjoyable.
Yeah, Spice Rack is pretty cool. He's pretty spicy.
Yeah, makes me very happy. So other than that, no, otherwise keep well. Keep well, do well. The usual nonsense.
Absolutely. And with that usual nonsense, guys, as always, thank you very much for listening. We have been Magic the Flavouring.
We'll see you soon.